Welcome back to Magnificat Media and Magnificat Radio, and your morning tradition with Mike and Lisa Austin. We're on location with our buddy Michael Murphy, who is gracious enough to take a few minutes on location this time, Michael, out of your car.
It's really nice to actually focus on the conversation
today.
Yeah,
and not have to drive and worry about crazy people.
Exactly.
Not that your driving is crazy.
Well,
have
you ridden with me?
No. Let's move on.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, so we're talking Latin, and it's all in sort of a fun way we want to sort of we've been introducing the language in different words and talking about how Latin words at the root of so many of our regulars, and we don't even realize our regular language, but you said that there are principles. We were talking off air about Latin in general, and you mentioned four
principles. That's right. You basically have four principal parts of a verb, four basic forms of a verb, so that from these that you can actually render a verb in any particular form in the way we speak. So those principal parts in general are indicative. Say if I use the word to move or moving, mm-hmm. If I say I move, that would be indicative.
Okay.
That's the first principal part, indicative. The second would be infinitive, which is to move. basically understanding what, that's usually in most languages, in Romance languages, and other, actually in Greek as well. That's really the real root, the real basis from which all understanding of the verb comes from.
But the
infinitive, that's right. So we have indicative, infinitive. The third part is a past or perfect action. I moved.
Okay.
The fourth is a perfect passive participle, which is a bit of a mouthful, I know. But,
triple P's,
right.
As we like to say.
But it's in our case, it would be having been moved. So it's in the past,
yes.
Right? And it's usually not, it's a dependent phrase. It's not the central part of a sentence.
Right.
Having been moved.
You can't have that unless you have.
Yes. Well, yes. Perhaps you'd say, having been sent to the grocery store, I was able to pick up the bag of chips.
Right.
So, you see, picking up the bag of chips is the essential part of the sentence. But there's this participle that comes that's a modifier. It describes it. But I picked this one. I think this segue is good into a particular verb, which is to suffer.
Oh, I love it. Okay.
And the verb of that is patere. That's the infinitive. Patior is the indicative. I suffer.
The word suffer or to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
Say it again.
The four principal parts would be patior,
mm-hmm.
patere, pati, and pasusum. The reason why I wanted to talk about the word suffering is because in the perfect passive participle, we have the word passion right in there. Passive. Passive comes from suffering.
So if you say that you're passive, so let's say in regular everyday life, we might say, oh, he's such a passive person.
That's right.
Meaning he suffers.
He suffers.
For someone else or something else.
That's right. An action is done to him, and therefore he receives it. He's passive.
Mm-hmm.
He's a sufferer of that action. We have an example of scripture, and we have this strange sort of almost archaic to modern ears now. Suffer the little children to come unto me.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's our Lord says that.
Right.
Right.
So what? Allow. Allow the children to come to me.
I am passive.
I will receive them.
Oh, okay.
We have a lot of words that come from this. You know, when we say someone's passed away, we understand where that
okay.
comes from now. They underwent passion. They suffered.
Okay.
Oh, that
makes
is so cool.
It is beautiful.
It
brings to mind passive suffering is not I don't know, it just brings to mind the thought of suffering as, hey, we always think of suffering as a bad thing. Not necessarily.
No, it's true. Not. No, of course, I'm sure our Lord loved to have the little children come to
yes.
him, right? But it's interesting how the dynamic of that word's changed over time. Because I think maybe it's an interesting commentary that could be a whole source of other conversation about modern culture. The word passion, we say somebody has real passion.
Mm-hmm.
That almost sounds like an action when we use that word. If I have passion to do this,
yes.
I have drive.
Yes.
Right.
I have drive.
Right.
That's so different than this the earlier understanding of the word passion.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, I'm a receiver of it. Things are happening to me. It may speak to maybe more of an egoism of a modern day.
Yes.
That could be.
To say, you know, it's
in everything. We always turn it around to it's all about me.
Right.
It's all about me.
Well, especially today.
And we like people to know that we're passionate about something. I'm passionate about this sports team. You know, mm-hmm. of all things, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Really? You're suffering for that sports team? Really? You know what I mean? Oh, that's funny. It just brings to light a whole new opening, which is why we do what we're doing here.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. With the Latin word of the day. That is beautiful, Michael. You really touched on something there.
Yeah.
I appreciate your time. We're running short on time, actually, and we thought, oh, this is going to be so quick. Well, it did go quick, but as usual, we're running a little bit short on time. So we're going to wrap up today's Latin word of the day, which we went with passion. Again, let's recap
yes.
this real quick. Okay, so passion, but using the
four principal parts of a verb in the Latin language, which is indicative, that's patior,
mm-hmm.
that means I suffer. Patere, which is to suffer. That's infinitive, the second part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The third part is the perfect or past, which would be pati. It means I suffered. And then the fourth principal part is the perfect passive participle, which is kind of odd in this case because
yes.
the suffering is already passive, but it would be passus sum.
Hmm.
Wow.
And it opened up that whole section, like you said, suffer the young children to come to me.
Mm.
It brings a whole different meaning. Not meaning, but a different light on it. Sheds a different light on
more
it.
More understanding.
Yeah, I think so.
Right.
Michael, thank you so much for taking your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're on location with us. We have coffee.
Oh.
Enjoy a Danish, would you?
I can do that better when I'm not driving.
We're going to take a break and come back with more of your morning tradition. Mike and Lisa Austin, we're going to take this break and wrap up today's show. Talk a little bit about formation coming up here in just a minute from Fatima Priest, the book about Father Gruner. It's an amazing little passage I found. And more. We're on the way next here on your morning tradition. Welcome back to your morning tradition here on Magnificat Radio at MagnificatMedia.com. Living our faith. Doing what we can. Get through day to day. Mike and Lisa Austin here on July the 20th as we wrap up this Monday morning show. Remember, we will replay this show again right away following this in case you got up late. And if you're hearing us in the afternoon, Central Time, by the way.
Correct.
Then disregard me saying morning throughout all the segments.
Right, because it happened in the morning.
And if I'm saying tune in again later, if you're listening to the replay already, don't tune in again later, because this is it. It's all you get. It gets complicated.
It does.
We do this thing like four times a day. We do a one-hour show four times over, because we just don't think you get enough of it. So, that's all. This little segment, we were going to do a little thing on, hopefully we can start a whole sort of ongoing series about formation. Our holy Catholic priests, what is that road? Where did it take you? Those of you who are parents of Catholic priests, God love you. You did your job and did it well. I don't know what that would be like to go to confession with my own son. I told Joseph, if he ever becomes a priest, it's never going to happen. Don't expect Daddy to come into the confessional and with Father Joseph, although it'd be Father Austin. It's not going to happen.
It just seems like it would be weird. I don't know. Maybe if it came up, maybe I would. But the formation of a young boy from generally altar boy, although I think there are some priests who converts didn't, they weren't altar boys. You know what I mean? They didn't go through that.
Right.
Converted as adults and became priests.
Right.
There's
or later in life,
later
in their 30s.
Yeah. Well, if you go to the ordinations, you see, generally you see young men, 20 or so. But every now and then you'll see
an older guy.
A guy in his 30s, maybe.
Studying to be a priest.
So it just shows you. I mean, the calling can come at any time.
And some of them have education, you know, a college degree.
Well, they all have education.
Well, I meant a college degree of some kind of trade or...
Right, with a Father Goshi was in the Marine Corps, still cuts his hair like that.
Mm-hmm.
He does. I want to salute him every time I see him. Father Goshi, and he was a teacher down in Houston, Texas. So anyway, what we plan to do and hope to do, if priests can get permission to come on our show, talk about, and not necessarily this show, maybe we have a whole nother show later in the day, a series of shows about formation. And have a priest talk about what that was like, what their particular journey was that brought them to that place. And it's an unendingly fascinating subject to me and to you as well, I know. We have conversations at the Austin family dinner table often with our young son sitting just to mama's right, my left.
Yes.
And...
But not only that, we also talk about being a sister also.
Right. Right. With
we
our
talk
daughters.
About the, those.
And I think that's important. We've always been told you can't push them. Don't push them into it. But you do have to expose. And that's what, you know, boys camp, girls camp. You have to expose them to the holy life.
Exactly. Because you have to talk about, you know, all forms of.
Yes.
I'm trying to think of the word, though.
Forms of formation?
No.
But you see in say, the Novus Ordo, the modernist church, the priestly ranks dwindling. For a long time, it's happened such. While traditional young boys and men become priests, how many did we have this last year? Six? Four? I forgot now how
four,
many we
I think.
Had. And that was another situation where we got to see many of those young men as young boys and grow up to be father.
Well, you went hiking with them,
too. It was a pilgrimage.
Yes.
We were on a pilgrimage.
Right.
And anyway, so what I wanted to do is read you some of this chapter, The Fatima Priest, The Story of Father Nicholas Gruner. This is just at the very beginning, chapter 2. And I'm reading along. I had just gotten into the book. I thought, oh, this is great. And it talks about his formation growing up in Canada. But then it gets into more of a general forming of the young boy. And let me just read you some of this. There's a lot here. But
okay.
There was a moment in the mass of all ages when many an altar boy made the transition from being just a child, listening to the blessed mutter of the Mass, as Newman called it, as it issued from the lips of the priest, to becoming, at heart, a priest himself. The transition took place in the heart on that landscape of innocence and trust, where, like a deer searching for a running brook, he had yearned for God, without knowing it, all his young life. Now, I'm going to skip ahead. Of all the moments of nurturing that demonstrated the sheer genius of Holy Mother Church, none surpassed that moment when the Bride of Christ, so breathtaking in her grandeur, nemesis of principalities and powers, terror of tyrants and ideologues, turns all her attention to the littlest of her children, the pure and trusting boy on the altar, and gives him an embrace that makes of his past, present, and future a love story unequaled in the annals of romance, the pure and utter thraldom that can only exist only between a young man and God.
Wow.
And the wording here is beautiful. And we're talking about formation. I just wanted to skip ahead just on down here just a little bit, as I know we're running short on time, but this is beautiful. powerful enough to wed time to eternity. Nevertheless, the love that entered the boy's heart at Lavabo remains within without a pulse until, as surely as the head is hinged to the shoulders, the boy following an impulse he could not fathom, nor scarcely even acknowledge, leans his head back and looks up at the body of the Son of Man hanging above the tabernacle. His eye follows the line of those tortured limbs, all four of them drawing the eye toward their point of intersection, that sacred heart hidden within the constricted chest. And the altar boy's heart begins to throb, beating out the rhythm of the realization that floods his soul, the rhythm of the answer to the question that has haunted him since first he saw that body on the cross. Why? For a moment, the boy is lost in the silence of the cross. But then, the ticking sounds are pounding, pounding, pounding within his own chest, and he knows the answer. Somehow, he makes his way through the remainder of his duties, changes into his own clothes, rushes out of the into the cold winter air of morning, and flies headlong homeward through the snow, crying, for me, and he is in love and called to be a priest forever.
Wow, that's sweet.
It doesn't stop there. It goes on and on, but we are running out of time. The Fatima Priest, if you can read this book, and I'm not much further than that.
Wow.
The story of Father Nicholas Gruner, but I thought that was profound and inspirational about priestly formation.
Right.
It's there's something going on there. We can, and every priest knows.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Only they know. Lisa,
it's divine.
Years ago, I found a poem, and I've never seen it anywhere else. I don't know where it came from. I thought it was so profound that I framed it and I gave it to you. I think it was Mother's Day, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after Joseph, we get Joseph. So, if read that, and this is my wife. This is Lisa reading a little poem about mothers of priests.
Okay. The title is called Mothers of Great Men. One day at dawn upon a great high hill, I stood on tiptoe and looked into heaven. I think it must have been the month of May, and Mother Mary was a feast day given. I saw about a great white festive board, fine ladies who had mothers been on earth. And Mother Mary smiled and bowed to them, because they had two great sons given birth. Then Jesus to his mother's party came, and chose from all the ladies gathered there a shy, small mother who had tried to hide, and placed her by him in a big gold chair. The mothers of the greatest men on earth just sat content to be at such a feast, but all with awe were filled when Jesus rose, and said, "Behold, the mother of a priest."
That's profound. That is beautiful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you have that poem. I don't know. Maybe we should write that on the website, make it available for download or something.
Yeah, we could do that.
That'd be very nice. That's going to wrap it up for us today, Monday, July 20th. This has been your morning tradition, Mike and Lisa Austin. Thank you for being here. My thanks to Ryan Sanders for the National Fatherhood Initiative. Our thanks to him being a guest on the show this morning.
Michael Murphy.
Michael, awesome job, man. We're going to have Michael back on again tomorrow and probably more with Father Wood. And
absolutely.
And thanks to Joseph for doing the saint of the day. Remember, later on today at about 12 noon, it's our first in a whole new series, Father Peter Scott.
Yes.
A whole conference. This is going to be like a 30-day conference, weekdays at noon on the Ten Commandments. This is going to be beautiful. Have a great Monday. Go forth. Go boldly. Your morning tradition, Mike and Lisa Austin.